While medical care is of paramount importance to a cancer patient, one's emotional state cannot be overlooked. Hi, I'm Joanne Green, and welcome to Smarter Medical Care. Our goal in these audio podcasts is to empower patients, their family members, and friends by providing clear, compassionate conversation with medical experts. Today's topic, the emotional and psychological impact of being diagnosed with cancer, will be addressed by oncologist Dr. Robert Rodvian, a medical director at the California Pacific Medical Center in San Francisco. Dr. Rodvian's shock, confusion, and fear would probably describe some of the emotions that new cancer patients feel, but I would suspect that some people may just feel somewhat numb initially.
That's quite possible. I think that the point about shock, confusion, fear, numb, it all may be describing sort of different negative emotions that occur within people when they first get told they have cancer. Nobody feels comfortable. Everyone has a degree of uncertainty.
This is not good news.
Absolutely not. Absolutely not. And the other part of it is that you don't hear anything for a little while after that comment is made, which is another example of how negatively oriented the rest of the conversation and the rest of the times of trying to consider what the doctor is saying to you once he says, I'm sorry, but it looks like the diagnosis is cancer.
I'm certain that many of the people listening to our podcast are not necessarily cancer patients themselves, but have cancer patients in their immediate circle, a family member, a close friend, a spouse, a parent, a child. Is there any advice that you can offer to family members or close friends on what to say or how to handle a loved one who's just received a diagnosis of cancer?
Well, if one of your friends or a family member comes to you and says, you know, the doctor tells me I have cancer, the first thing you should just step back and realize this conversation is not going to be about you. Don't give answers before there are questions raised. Don't think about how you might respond, because that might be irrelevant to the person who you're talking to. And you should realize that if somebody asks you a question, unless you know exactly what that person's position is and where they're going with it, always at least consider answering a question with a question. For example, they say, what did I tell my kids? And your answer could be something like, well, what are your concerns? If somebody says, I really don't want to talk to my folks about this at all, or, you know, one of my kids is 6 years old, or I don't want to have it go out in the neighborhood, there is a sense of, let's try and keep it in a small group initially. Rather than anticipating why you think the person with cancer is raising that issue, ask questions about it before you give advice.
Upon hearing that a loved one has a potentially life-threatening disease, we go through our own emotions. Fear, uncertainty, confusion. So how do we handle that and yet not make things worse for the person who received the diagnosis?
You try and figure out what is going on in you. And if you can't figure that out directly, you talk to some of your other friends or talk to your spouse or in some way try to come to grips. You don't have to respond to the person's anxiety when they take you into their confidence to say, the doctor just told me I have cancer. You don't have to act as a sounding board for that anxiety and throw it right back at the person, or the confusion, or the fear, or the numbness. Realize that conversations are going to go slowly, and if the person has one or two questions that seem to be the important ones to the person with cancer, then you step back and you think about, how am I going to handle this the next time? And be prepared with a simple statement that that person can remember.
For example,
let's pick up on the one we were just talking about, the one where someone says, God, I just can't imagine speaking to my six-year-old about this. I think I'm just going to keep my mouth shut and not bring it up to them. You're sitting there as the friend or the family member, and you're saying, well, what are your concerns? And as they start to speak about their concerns, it evolves that they're really afraid that the child's going to misunderstand everything that's going on, think that mom or dad is going to die now. We can't do anything. They're going to be sick. One of the children may say to themselves, I know so-and-so, and their mom lost all her hair, and then she died. And I don't want to put my kid through that. Well, when you come back the next conversation or later in the conversation, if you're comfortable with having thought it through, you might turn around and say, you know, I can understand the concept of not telling the six-year-old, but in reality, do you really think that this is going to not be addressed? That someone, if you don't tell him, someone else will.
Or he'll hear it.
Yeah, you know, he'll hear a conversation or you think he's asleep. That's the kind of thing where if you know who's bringing up the question to you, what do I tell my six-year-old, and you've heard what their immediate issues are as they try to search through it, you may be able to slowly come to a conclusion in which you can give them one sound bit of advice. And frankly, any bit of advice that is sound is better than nothing at all.
We like sound advice around here.
Yeah, we do. Definitely do.
Let's talk for a minute about partners. Often, two people in a relationship have very different reactions to news that is difficult to bear. Some people don't want to talk about it. Other people have the need to continually talk about it. I've had friends who, upon getting a diagnosis of cancer, felt like, you know what? Tell all my friends so everyone knows, and I don't have to go through that process of telling everybody one by one and who knows what. And I've known other people who felt that they needed to be the keeper of the information. How do you handle that when two people in a partnership have very different ways of dealing with the information?
Well, what you're addressing is the whole issue that people come to the table of any of these discussions or come to the situation in which they're told they have cancer or their spouse has cancer with pre-existent concepts, thoughts, prejudices, behaviors. Everyone's personality is different. And that's why as you try to work through these things, you can only get a couple of generalities, like answer a question with a question until you know what's going on. You can't really lay out a clear path for how a husband and wife should interact with each other, because think of it this way. People are in their 25th year of marriage, and some people have nearly separated two or three times. Other people have never even had that kind of an argument. Some people go their own ways. Other people are attached at the hip. The extrovert gets cancer. The introvert gets cancer. The person who has to share with everyone, the person who doesn't want anybody to know and thinks that if you don't say anything, nothing will ever be known in the community.
But is it the person who has the illness? Do their needs trump everybody else's?
Absolutely. That's why when they speak, they move to center stage in terms of how are you going to share this with people? And you have to respect the circumstances that a person with cancer is in, their feelings, how they want things to evolve. They may, in fact, put something forward in day one or week one that a couple of months later makes no sense to them either, so that you don't have to respond to everything. But you do have to respect that it's the person with cancer whose opinions have to be respected.
Even though this is happening to the spouse, too.
Correct.
Right?
Correct. Absolutely. The spouse can be in a terrible position.
And the children and the parents and
right.
the friends and the siblings.
That's
all
right.
of those people, you know, cancer doesn't just happen in a vacuum. Nothing in life happens in a vacuum. So when something serious, a life-threatening illness, strikes an individual, there's a ripple effect.
Absolutely. It's the same thing with spouses or kids or parents of anybody who has a serious disease, be it multiple sclerosis, schizophrenia, any of the chronic, active, in one way or another, debilitating illnesses that will affect the rest of your life. And today is the first day of the rest of your life when you get told you have cancer. And for any of those problems, the spouses are functioning in much the same way. They have to become better listeners and realize who's going to set the pace is the person with cancer.
I remember at one point someone who had cancer telling me that part of why they became so focused on who said what to whom was because at least this was something they would try to control. And one of the things I think that many cancer patients feel, correct me if I'm wrong, you're the expert, is that they're not in control anymore. something has taken over and their life is out of their control. So if maybe they can just control the information flow, they're controlling something.
Yeah, I think you're right. I sometimes wonder if the way people respond is an exaggeration of their personality. So if they're obsessive by nature, they become more obsessive. If they're compulsive, if they're control freaks, if they're passive.
Paranoid,
whatever it is, that may come to the fore. The other thing that may come to the fore are either strengths or weaknesses.
Do cancer patients get used to the idea of having cancer and just accept it emotionally, or is it really just a perpetual roller coaster for most people?
I think people who have cancer, especially cancers that are not curable but will remain with them, perhaps for quite a long time, those people, they are constantly aware they have cancer. When they're in a conversation, they may hear somebody say something about someone else, and it immediately brings it back to mind. They're very susceptible to that kind of preoccupation. There are other people who just wish they could get rid of the stress, wish they could get rid of the anxiety, are convinced that their stress and anxiety are making their cancer worse. There's really no proof that stress and anxiety cause cancer. But certainly there are people who have that kind of roller coaster ride. I don't see that as a common behavior. And certainly you sort of age out of that kind of up and down motion and find some other place of uncertainty when you have a continuing cancer.
Each time we answer a question, we raise 10 more, which is why we have no shortage of topics to address on Smarter Medical Care. He's Dr. Robert Rodvian, and I'm Joanne Green. Please subscribe to our podcasts at smartermedicalcare.org and spread the word about these free informational programs designed for cancer patients, their family members, and friends to learn more and ease their anxiety. Smarter Medical Care podcasts are free on any computer and are available on iTunes, smarterpodcasts.com, or smartermedicalcare.org.
SmarterPodcasts.com, delivering sound advice.